You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Katie Frankowitz. Clatsop Community College in Astoria is looking at cuts to programs and staff, citing a $700,000 budget deficit, low enrollment, and rising costs. Leadership laid off 5 full-time positions in March, moved other positions to part-time, and has proposed suspending 3 programs going into the next academic year. The programs include the Automotive Technology Program, Computer-Aided Design and Drafting, and the Historic Preservation and Restoration Program. The college has an obligation to teach out current students in these programs, but no new students will be enrolled for now. College President Jared Hogue says some individual classes could return, but that the proposed cuts were based in part on student enrollment and completion of the programs.
It's always going to be tough decisions, and I don't think delaying decisions and putting the college in a rough financial situation or, you know, adding to the financial challenges is the way to go. I think it's being smart about how we're allocating, how we're spending, where are areas that we can cut that have least impact on students. And so those are the tough decisions we have to make.
Among the full-time positions eliminated are the Career and Technical Education Director position and the college's only full-time librarian. Some other positions that the college hoped to fund will be put on hold for now, including full-time faculty positions in chemistry and social sciences next year. The college also plans to close the campus store and repurpose the space. Hogue says all of the changes are due to a current $700,000 deficit and increasing costs, but also because of anticipated large increases in the college's public employee retirement system liability, or PERS, the state-mandated retirement plan for public employees. The college is looking at another potential $700,000 just in pension liability costs. Then there is the low enrollment seen in some of the programs, coupled with the low rates of student completion. Hogue says those numbers speak for themselves. He says Clatsop Community College is not alone in facing these financial challenges.
In Clatsop's case in particular, the state funding that we are receiving has not kept pace with our costs to run the institution.
The layoffs have already happened, but other proposed cuts have not. They'll need to be approved by the college's Board of Education. The cuts will be part of a budget Hogue plans to present to the board at the end of April. He expects there may be questions and potentially pushback, especially from some in the community over the suspension of the Historic Preservation Program.
As buildings get older and older, there's not enough people to continue to maintain them.
Vance McDermott is a former student in the program and, until this past fall, a member of the Astoria City Council. He changed his last name from Lump to McDermott following a divorce and no longer lives in the area. McDermott began taking classes with the college's Historic Preservation Program during the COVID-19 pandemic. He was looking for a career change and quickly zeroed in on what would become his niche, windows. For the past 4 years now, work on historic windows has been his entire business.
The city has a goal to want to have more jobs available for people locally that aren't based in the service sector, and the trades are something that is ripe for opportunity. And so to see something like this get suspended, I think is really kind of just going the wrong direction.
McDermott started his business while in the Historic Preservation Program, but never graduated from the program.
I did maybe 95% of it. I think I have like 1 or 2 classes I still need to do officially if I were to graduate. But for me, the point was not getting the degree, but getting a career. And I had achieved that. So I didn't really need to get the paper.
Other historic preservation students KMUN interviewed described similar approaches and experiences. They told KMUN that Hogue's focus on program completion and enrollment numbers as markers of the program's success doesn't capture the true impact of the program. They described fellow students who are looking to embark on second or even third careers while still managing full-time jobs. Some of them only need specific classes. The cost and time commitment means some students on a degree track need to spread out when they take classes. To read more on this story, go to KMUN.org/news. A gray whale seen swimming in a southwest Washington river has died. The juvenile whale had swum around 20 miles up the Willapa River and appeared extremely thin. Researchers eventually found it dead in shallow water. Two other adult gray whales were recently found dead at Ocean Shores, Washington. John Kalambakidis of the Cascadia Research Collective says it's part of a larger decline in gray whale populations, to the lowest level in 50 years.
This isn't just this boom-bust cycle we've seen before. This looks like something more prolonged, more extended, something much more troubling.
Scientists will perform an examination of the whales. They say the public should avoid the remains. This is KMUN. President Trump wants to create a national list of eligible voters and bar ballots from being mailed to anyone who is not on it. Washington's Attorney General is co-leading a lawsuit to block that order. More from KNKX reporter Freddie Monares.
Trump says his order would curb fraud in vote-by-mail elections. He's asking states to turn over their voter lists and is threatening to withhold funding for governments that don't comply. Washington State Attorney General Nick Brown says that mail-in voting is safe, legal, and used by many people, including the president himself. States have the power to control how they conduct elections. And the lawsuit argues that Trump's order is unconstitutional because the president cannot single-handedly change federal election procedures. Leaders with 22 other states, including Oregon, plus Washington, D.C., signed on to the lawsuit. And it's not the first time Trump has tried to change vote-by-mail procedures. A federal judge in Seattle in January blocked an order that sought to reject ballots received after Election Day and require voters to provide a citizenship document. In Seattle, I'm Freddie Monades.
Measles cases in Oregon are ticking up. There have been more than a dozen confirmed cases this year, with hundreds of people exposed in grocery stores and emergency departments, but few reports of the virus transmitting outside of households. Amelia Templeton has more.
The Oregon Health Authority defines a measles outbreak as three or more connected cases. And so far, the state hasn't had any outbreaks that involve more than a single household. But there are signs that cases are going undetected, like when people aren't sick enough to seek a diagnosis. Many counties with no reported cases are getting hits of measles in their wastewater. State Health Officer Dean Seidlinger suggests parents who have delayed getting their kids a measles vaccine talk to their doctor.
Measles is much more common. It's going to become even more common as the months go on. And so the environment has changed. Maybe their decision about vaccinating their child might change as well.
People who are vaccinated are at low risk. Two doses of the shot provide strong lifetime protection. In Portland, I'm Amelia Templeton.
People who are lawfully in the United States but are not permanent residents can no longer receive temporary commercial driver's license or learner's permits in Oregon. OPB's Bryce Dole reports.
The Trump administration is trying to make it harder for non-residents to receive temporary commercial driver's licenses. As part of its immigration crackdown, the federal government has honed in on several crashes to justify its push for new regulations. Meanwhile, the administration has threatened to pull funding from states like Oregon that don't comply. That pressure forced state transportation leaders in March to stop issuing these credentials as it faced a $23 million federal funding cut. About 900 non-residents have these licenses in Oregon. Among them are refugees, asylum seekers, and DACA recipients. Still, a spokesperson for the State Transportation Department says Oregon does not have evidence that people with these licenses are particularly unsafe drivers. I'm Bryce Dole, reporting.
Get ready for a busy fire season this summer. A low snowpack has primed the Northwest to turn dry and fire-prone earlier than usual this year. KUOW's John Ryan reports.
Snow shortages in Washington and around the West have fire experts bracing for a bad year for wildfires. Karen Bumbacco is Washington's deputy state climatologist.
You have a longer window of opportunity for those fires to get started and spread when the snowpack melts out sooner than normal.
Snowpack in Washington's mountains was nearly half below normal levels as of Friday. Oregon's snowpack was 80% below normal. Federal fire officials expect eastern Washington and eastern Oregon to be at high fire risk as early as June. Fire hazards are expected to get worse and spread to southwest Oregon in July. Other parts of the West have severe snow droughts, too. That means smoke from other states' fires has a good chance of darkening northwest skies. I'm John Ryan reporting.
This is local and regional news on KMUN. Oregon's largest ski resort is getting into the hotel business for the first time. Jen Bydras has more.
This week, Mount Bachelor announced plans to open a 70-room hotel over the summer. The move comes at the end of a dismal snow season, and a year after the resort's owner, Powder, walked back plans to sell Mount Bachelor. Dubbed the Trailhead Lodge, the hotel property is located 18 miles down from the popular ski resort, near Bend. It sits on the edge of Deschutes National Forest. Lauren Burke, Mount Bachelor's Director of Marketing and Communications, says the lodge will allow the company to appeal to a broader audience for year-round activities.
There's a ton of outdoor space, seating space, a great spot for us to hold events like our pass holder parties, some of our community events.
The hotel's former operator went into foreclosure earlier this year. I'm Jen Bydas reporting.
A new digital tool seeks to help Oregonians know whether they can perform outdoor debris burns. KLCC's Macy Moore reports.
Before You Burn is a website and app that tells users if outdoor debris burning is allowed in their area. It also gives instructions on how to follow local fire regulations. According to the Fire Prevention Coordinator for the Oregon Department of Forestry, Tom Fields, before this application was created, people would have to look for information on fire regulations from several different sources.
It's going to reduce confusion from the public standpoint. Whenever someone wishes to find out whether they can burn or not, they really don't know who to call because there are so many different players.
The app is a collaboration between the ODF, the State Department of Environmental Quality, and other regional organizations. Outdoor debris burning is the number one human cause of wildfires in Oregon. I'm Macy Moore reporting.
Since 2012, Oregon has lost two-thirds of its marine kelp forests, according to the Oregon Kelp Alliance. A Newport-based company is working to help solve the problem with a business model that unites environmental and economic goals. KLCC's Brianna Bowman and Brian Bayhuth have the story.
On the Oregon coast, Nate Parker Jones is a commercial fisher, but he doesn't use a crab pot or even a hook and line. He dives for his catch using an airline from his boat rather than a scuba tank to go after his target, a little creature that looks like a spiky tennis ball called a sea urchin.
I just drop down to the bottom and more or less walk around like I normally would on land, but the conditions can be wild. On a good day of diving, I can see my hand if I reach it out as far as I can away from my face, but just barely. But the surge of the waves crashing against the rocks can move me back and forth up to 10 feet. So you don't know where you're going to end up next.
Parker Jones is the lead commercial diver for the Newport-based Uni Sea Ranch and chief scientist for Oregon Seaweed. Commercial urchin divers are after the roe or eggs inside of an urchin, also known as uni, a delicacy prized in sushi restaurants. A commercial fishery for sea urchins has existed along the Oregon coast for decades. Now collecting these animals from the ocean is also an act of conservation. That's because sea urchins are wreaking havoc on Oregon's kelp forests. Sarah Hamilton is the scientific coordinator for the Oregon Kelp Alliance.
2015 through 2020, we saw this rapid systemic loss of kelp forests up and down the coast. And for the most part, in the places where we've lost them, they have not come back.
Purple urchins are not an invasive species, but a warmer ocean has caused them to move deeper and multiply.
In a report that we published in 2024, we found that across almost all of our kelp forest sites, purple urchin populations had increased. And in some places, they had increased up to like 1,000-fold. And so kelp is urchins' favorite food. And so I kind of liken it to, if you have one goat on an acre of pasture, you're probably good to go. But if you have 1,000 goats on an acre of pasture, you don't have pasture anymore. You just have dirt.
One might think that an explosion in sea urchins on the coast would be good news for sea urchin divers, but Hamilton says that's not the case.
The urchins graze the kelp down, and then the kelp doesn't grow back, and the urchins just kind of sit there in a little bit of a hibernation mode for years and years and years.
According to Hamilton, when the urchins hibernate, they basically start devouring their own organs and become withered and useless as sushi. In this context, a company like Uni Sea Ranch straddles the chasm between commerce and habitat restoration. Here to tell us more is my colleague, Brian Bayhuth.
Commercial divers like Uni's Nate Parker-Jones remove the emaciated urchins from reefs and bring them back to an onshore facility to fatten them up and then sell them. Brad Bailey is co-owner of the Uni Sea Urchin Ranch and designed the recirculating aquaculture systems that mimic the nutrient cycle of an Oregon reef. The prototype system of tanks and pipes are arranged in a couple cargo containers at the Central Coast Food Web facility on the Aquinnah Bay in Newport.
We use urchins, cucumbers, and dulse for the three species that we have in the system. The urchins eat the algae pellets. The cucumbers then eat the waste from the urchins, and then that waste from the cucumbers feeds the dulse, the red seaweed, in the tank, and that cleans the water up. Cleans it up so well that we never have any ammonia detectable in the system. So when we change the water to collect the wastes for scientific studies, the water going back to the bay is cleaner than the water that we bring in.
Bailey says the facility enables him to systematically refine technical details and demonstrate profitability. The system is a scalable template for an urchin farm that Bailey says will ultimately raise and sell 1 million urchins a year. But for conservationists like Sarah Hamilton, the Uni Sea Ranch and Kelp Alliance are only part of the solution. Efforts to reestablish natural urchin predators like giant sea stars and sea otters have been underway for years with mixed results in Oregon. There's a lot more to learn.
We're already figuring out, like, it's not just which levers, but it's which levers in which places at which intensities. And so there's a whole science and, frankly, kind of an art to doing this work that we're just starting to wrap our heads around.
As part of a strategic plan, Uni Sea Ranch divers are first removing urchins from areas where kelp still exists before removing urchins from places where kelp has disappeared. With this strategy, the hope is to maintain and expand existing forest and, by degrees, restore the vital kelp forest ecosystem. In Newport, I'm Brian Bayhuth.
And I'm Brianna Bowman, reporting.
Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Department. If you have a news tip or story idea, email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, @kmun.org. You're listening to KMUN.